Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Permit are considered one of the top saltwater game species. Ask any permit fisherman and they will tell you how finicky they can be. But that's what makes them so rewarding. Ben Faremski and I spent a week at Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize and were blown away by the number of permit we saw. We had shots all day and caught quite a few, even a double. On this episode of the podcast, Ben and I sit down with Melvin McCaleb, one of the owners of Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize, as well as guides Ernest Garcia and Max Neal. We get you fully dialed in on top tips for permit, tarpon, and bonefish. Rods, lines, leaders, and flies, and a few funny stories, it's all in there. If you love or have an interest in saltwater fly fishing, this episode is for you. Enjoy, and please follow along as lots more great episodes are coming your way. Are you a guide, a lodge, or a product manufacturer in the fly fishing or outdoor industry? I want to introduce you to and highlight Cross Current Insurance. Their entire team are great people and experts in their field. They have a guide insurance program that is amazing and very affordable. If you are a lodge or retailer, they also have programs tailored to your needs. These guys fish and are in the outdoors, so they know the industry and the landscape. To get more information on a program that's perfect for you, find them at crosscurrentinsurance.com. Well, guys, welcome to the next edition of the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast. We are here live from Belize, and we are at Tarpon Key Lodge, fishing for permit, tarpon, and bonefish. I'm excited to have Melvin McCaleb, who is the lodge owner here at Tarpon Key Lodge, Ben Faremski, the Fly Fishing Show director of the Nationwide Fly Fishing Show Tour, Max Neal, our guide for this week, and Ernest Garcia, the head guide and artist. I want to talk a little bit about that artwork as well. Guys, first of all, thank you all for being on our podcast.
Thank you for coming and visiting with us.
It's been a great week. It's been a wonderful week. And we want to talk about Belize as a country, but also we want to kind of mark this podcast as Belize top tips for permit, tarpon, and bonefish. And what better place to do it here in Belize? First, I want to start with you, Melvin. Tell us a little bit about Belize as far as a country. You know, why you decided to buy a lodge here? Because I want to understand, for people who don't understand, what Belize has to offer as far as tourism.
Well, the basic story is I came here on vacation, fell in love with the country, started looking around, looking at islands, and we decided to buy a business here. Belize accepts American currency. They speak English. The hospitality is phenomenal. You can go anywhere in Belize and ask someone for direction, and they will help you.
You actually mentioned that. Well, I want to get into this. You bought an island. Not only did you buy a destination lodge, but you bought an island. How does that work? How do you buy an island in another country?
Actually, here in Belize, it's easy to buy property, and you do own the property outright. And then you can also retire and move to Belize, and the retirement program is phenomenal as well.
Does this island have a particular name, or is it just called Tarpon Key Lodge?
It is Tarpon Key Island, and it was named back in the early 90s, and it was founded and started around 96.
And we have to mention, too, your partner, Sheldon James, is a great guy. We connected through the Fly Fishing Show, and just a wonderful ambassador to your lodge as well.
Yes, Sheldon does all of our PR work and scheduling, and we have a great relationship on owning this island, and we've had a few very well done ventures together, so this one was exciting for us and still is exciting for us.
Tell us a little bit about where we are in Belize, because we're kind of on the southern end. Give us the geography of where we are, how you get here, that type of thing.
So when you come to Belize, you'll fly into Belize City, then you'll take a prop plane down from Belize City on Tropic Air or Maya Air. You'll come to Placencia, which is about 200 miles south Belize City. Maybe a little less.
A little less, yeah.
What we do is we pick our guests up at the airport in Placencia, and then it's a 45-minute boat ride out to the island. We're 15 miles east of Placencia, 3 miles short of the reef.
And you have this big channel, the Victoria Channel, that runs right by here. So
yeah, the Victoria Channel actually splits and runs around all four sides of the island. So once you get out into the coral, there's a drop-off about 200 yards off the shoreline, and it drops down to 100 feet deep.
So for me, I came out of Boston. I did a connecting flight through Houston, so Boston to Houston, Houston direct to Belize City. And then we just jumped on that. It was like a little taxi, air taxi, to Placencia.
Yeah, it's a 14-person prop plane.
It's fun.
And it's a fun trip.
And then tell us a little bit about Placencia, because that would be the nearest community that you pick up your guests from. Tell us a little bit about what Placencia has to offer.
Placencia is a fast-growing area. There are a lot of resorts in Placencia now. They have a putt-putt golf course there now. They have a brewery. A microbrewery there now, and then they also make their own rum just north of Placencia. So it's a very happening area, not quite as bad as San Pedro yet, but it is growing quick.
We're going to take a short commercial break to hear from Tim O'Neill of Norvice.
What makes the Norvice different than another system?
There are a lot of rotary fly tying vices out there. The Norvice is the only vice that will truly spin when you tie flies, and there's a big difference between rotating a vice slowly and spinning it at a bit of a faster RPM. And being able to spin the hook on a zero axis rotations opens up a lot of doors for us in the world of fly tying.
Tell me about the introduction of colors to the Norvice system.
When we obtained the company from Norm, he said to me just a very, very short statement. He said, you know, I always thought a colored Norvice would be a cool item. We brought out five colors: Radical Red, Sunset Orange, Shamrock Green, Liberty Blue, and Royal Purple. We have five colors along with the black that you're accustomed to seeing with Norvice, and we've been doing very well with those.
To find more information and their online store, visit nor-vice.com. Ben, I want to bring you into this conversation because you've fished around the world. When you think of Belize, what are some of the things that come to your mind?
Well, when I think of Belize, from experience, now I would say tailing fish, but beautiful water, islands, and just a great tropical feel and a pretty good climate, really. You know, there's a lot of places when you talk about the flats that may get pretty hot when you're out there fishing. But every time that I've been to Belize or wherever I've been in Belize, it's kind of a nice tropical climate. You're not just sweating all day long. There's always a nice tropical breeze. It's a good place to be at your lodge and enjoy the weather.
Yeah. So, Ernest, Ben talked about a bit about the islands right there, right? So there's islands everywhere. How does that come into play when you take your clients out for some fishing?
Well, the islands, depending on what you're fishing for, like during the day, you know, all of the islands, they have somewhat of a reef structure around them. So different types of fish will gather around different islands. And especially like for bonefish, we tend to find that the islands right on the main reef are the target for bonefish. Then the other islands behind the main reef, we get a lot of permit and tarpon around those ones.
So talk a bit about that, Ernest, because people come down here. What are the target species when somebody comes down to Belize?
The targeted species are, you know, Belize is known as one of the best permit destinations in the world. So obviously the first target for coming to Belize is permit. But there's also tarpon, bonefish, and for people who has never done saltwater before, it's a great place to come because it's not just those species that we get. We get a lot of other fishes as well, like jacks, barracudas, mackerels, grouper. So all kinds of stuff you can catch on the fly.
So why would you say it's known as one of the best permit destinations? Like, what makes Belize one of the best permit destinations?
Just the number of fish. You know, we have a lot of fish here. You can go to other places in the world and fish for permit, and you will not get the amount of opportunities that you'll get here in Belize, tailing fish or just cruising fish. The numbers here is second to none.
So tell me about the mindset of the permit fisherman. Because it's a different type of bird, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a different type of guy who fishes for permit.
Yeah.
crazy people.
Well, honestly, I think the mindset of somebody, a guide or just an angler who fishes for permit, you know, you got to have like a hunting mindset. If you're a hunter, somebody that loves to hunt and stalk a game, I think permit is something that you like, because that's more what you're doing. You know, this is sight fishing. This is hunting. This is, yeah.
Pulling around an island.
Just looking. Yeah, until you find that fish tailing or just cruising, and still yet you got to wait for the right opportunity to present itself for you to make that shot.
So one of the things that I've seen with permit fishermen is they all know how many permit they've caught. What is the deal with that, Melvin? Because I don't have no idea how many trout I've caught.
It's easy to count to 10.
Yeah, I figured that too, yeah. We don't keep track. I mean, we catch a lot of fish here over the years. Yeah. So many fish with lots of different clients, and a lot of them with the same clients. They come back every year, and we catch a lot of fish. So, but it's hard to keep track of.
Do you find that, though, that people know how many permit they've caught?
I find more the anglers.
The anglers. The clients who come down.
Yeah, most of them have some kind of record of how many they caught. Yeah.
Well, you're looking at guys that are spending good money to come here and fish, and typically, you do it once a year or less, but then we do have guests that come multiple times a year, and that is their trophy, the permit. So they definitely keep track of it, just like a hunter would tell you exactly what his buck scored if he shot a big buck.
Yeah.
These guys keep track of it. And our Grand Slams and Super Slams here are one of the best around.
So what would be a Grand Slam here in Belize?
So a Grand Slam is catching the three species in 18 hours. So that is the tarpon, permit, and bonefish. A Super Slam is 18 hours as well, but you add the snook to it, so the four.
So 18 hours, can it be overnight too, 18 hours, or it has to be the same day?
From the time you catch your first fish to the time you catch your last fish, 18 hours.
Well, interesting. So let's talk about setup here, Ernest, because I know some people are listening. They want to say, all right, I want to come to Belize. I want to catch a permit, a tarpon, and a bonefish. I want that Grand Slam. What would be a rod? Let's start with the rods, because we're going to go through rods. We're going to go through reels, lines, leaders, flies. We're going to talk about the whole setup. So let's start with the rods, Ernest. If I want to come and I want to catch a Grand Slam, I want to fish for a permit, I want to fish for tarpon, I want to fish for bonefish, what type of rods and style of rods and weight of rods should I bring?
Definitely, when it comes to the rods, you know, you want to use for permit either a 9 or a 10.
Okay.
Some people like to go lighter with an 8, but sometimes you have conditions, wind.
Sure.
You know, that will affect you a bit. So
I ran into a bit of that.
Yeah, 9 and 10 is perfect for permit, tarpon, anything from a 10 to a 12.
Okay.
For tarpon, and with the tarpon also, coming in fishing in this area here, the tarpon are not always in the shallows or up on the flats, so sometimes you find them in along the drop-off, along the flats, or even in the rivers where it's a little deeper. So if you can bring an intermediate line or a fast-sinking line, sometimes that'll help.
Okay. So I brought an 8, I brought a 9, and I brought a 10. So we kind of set it up like that. We brought the 10 weight for tarpon, we brought the 9 weight for permit, and we brought an 8 weight for bonefish. How would I want to set up the boat?
All the boats are set up that it can take anywhere from 3 to 6 rods. And if it's two of you fishing on the boat, then you know you can take 6 rods, 3 on each side. And that way you can be prepared. You can take a permit rod, a bonefish rod, a tarpon rod on each side of the boat. So you know you're ready for whatever comes your way. You never know what you're going
to
run into.
All pre-rigged and ready to
all
go.
All rigged and ready to go.
Yeah.
But you'd also don't want the novice people to feel that pressure either. You could take 3 rods. You could take, you know, an 8, a 9, or a 10, and a 12, and people are sharing because there's only one person casting at a time. So I don't want people to think that they have to spend $6,000 or $7,000 to come here and fish, and I want to make that, you know.
That's a good point.
A known thing. Plus, we rent rods, and we have flies and everything available for people who are new to saltwater because it is expensive to get rigged out.
Ideally, between the group, you would have an 8, a 9, and a 10.
Correct.
Yeah. And then if somebody doesn't have one of those rods, they can just rent it here.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got an 8 for bonefish. We have a 9 for permit. And we have a 10 for tarpon.
Yeah, that's fine.
So let's talk a bit about a leader setup, Ben. Let's start with the permit. How would I want to set up my leader? Because you can get both pre-made leaders or you can make your leaders.
Yeah, and both are going to work for you. But best answer for your leader is to adjust it to yourself. If you're going to have calm winds, you're going to go a longer, lighter leader. If you're going to have heavy winds, make it so you can cast that fly. Better to have a shorter leader and present the fly than to have a tangled leader that flops down because you made it to cast a light fly and your crab fly is bulky and heavy to cast in the wind and it collapses your cast. So a leader is designed to transfer the energy from your cast to your fly. Your tippet is to present the fly to the fish without scaring it. But also, a lot of people don't realize like the tippet affects the sink rate of the fly. So the heavier the leader in the tippet, the slower your fly is going to sink. So if you have a small, light fly and you want it to sink a little faster, you can go to a lighter leader, which is going to allow that fly to sink a little faster, and you're going to get a more technical presentation for shallow water fish or calmer conditions. But if you have windy, blustery conditions, you're going to be able to get closer to those fish. So don't try to cast a 15 or 20 foot leader if you can't even cast those under the best conditions. Shorten it and stiffen it so you can present the fly, and because otherwise you're going to miss your every shot.
So for permit, we have like pre-made leaders, right? You can go a pre-made knotted leader, probably like a Rio or something. And a lot of different companies made pre-made permit leaders. What do you guys do for leaders here when you take a client out on the boat, Ernest, for leaders?
Yeah, well, we use those same pre-made leaders as well. The only thing with them is that when you start like changing flies and cutting down your leader, and then you want to add some more tippet onto it to make it a little bit longer, like bring it back to 9 or 10 feet. You know, you don't want to add on when it's too close to the fly. It's better to cut it further back and add a section on there to make it longer, just to keep that knot away from the fish.
So do you find people want to bring out leader material to make their own leaders?
Yeah.
So what would be a step down? How would I want to make a leader? Start with like a what pound test on the top?
So if you want to make your own leader, you can start with maybe a 30 or a 25 and then step down to like a 15 or 16. Because that's the size we normally use for permit.
Okay.
15, 16, or sometimes up to 20. And the reason for that is because here there's a lot of corals. You know, if you go with a very, very light leader, like say, let's say a 12-pound leader, chances of you breaking off that fish is very high. And you, with a 15 up to 20-pound, you stand right. a better chance. And that's still light enough that it's not going to spook that fish.
Right. We actually started a little higher. We kind of use a small section of like maybe a 40 or 60 to help transfer that energy on the top, and then brought it down to, what would you say you want to bring it down to? Yeah. That's a better question.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, to start higher, exactly for transferring that energy, because you know the thickness of the fly line, you know, tapering down into that leader.
So like maybe a 40
or 60. You start a little smaller, it's a little tough to get a turnover, but once you're confident in yourself enough to make that leader turnover and make it work, it's better to use that, because then if you go from, let's say, a 40 or 50 down to a 20 or smaller, that knot might not hold for you because the step down is too far apart.
Right. For permit, where do I want to end up at? You said 20 pounds?
Between 15 and 20.
Depending upon the situation.
Depending on the situation, exactly. Because we've had situations where we have to downsize to get these fish to eat sometimes, and we have to get all the way down to a 12-pound. You know, and if you're fishing in open grass areas or open sand flats, fine.
That's okay for a 12.
Yeah, go down to a 12 and have fun with that fish, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So that's our leaders. We got between a 9 and a 12-foot leader. We could start anywhere from 40 to 60 pounds down to, say, 15 or 20 pounds knotted leader. Ben, is there a percentage like a 60 or 40, 40, 20 type of thing? I know we had set up our leads in our...
Well, I prefer a pretty long butt section where the butt matches the flex of your fly line. So instead of worrying about the pound test on your butt, because it's the butt section of your leader, it's definitely going to be heavier than your tippet. Just check the flex based off of your fly line, and if they flex the same, so if you have a stiffer leader material, it may be 40 pounds.
Okay.
If you have a little softer leader material, it may be 50 pounds. But if that butt section flexes the same as your fly line, it's going to transfer the energy. If it's too stiff, it's going to open your loop. If it's too soft, it's going to collapse your loop. And then I prefer a longer butt section, a short taper, and then a longer tippet. That I typically like my tippet to be at least 1.5 times the length of the fish that I'm targeting, or 1.5 times the depth of the water. And that keeps that knot kind of out of the way. If it snags a little piece of grass or something, it's kind of out of the view of the fish to distract it.
Okay.
So maybe, you know, to answer your question, I would have maybe 1/3 butt, 1/3 tippet, and then 1/3 taper.
Perfect. And then they can adjust that from there depending upon their own personal taste.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Third. And if you buy the pre-bought ones, just like Ernest was saying, you can just replace the whole tippet. And that's why I would prefer a knotted leader rather than a tapered leader, because you don't know where that, you know, where you've got to replace the tippet. You just cut off the knot and tie in a whole new tippet section after you've changed flies, or it's gotten roughed up in the coral here. Which I might add is here you do want to check your leader pretty often, especially if you've had a fish, because we've had to replace quite a bit of leader with these corals around here, and it'll just shave the line and burr it, and you don't want to lose a big fish later because you had a roughed up leader.
Right.
One more thing to add to when it comes to the leaders is for tarpon fishing, especially out here with this clear water, we find that the tarpons are very leader shy. So we do use some of the pre-made stuff, but we prefer to use just a straight leader, just maybe a straight piece of 50 or 60, you know, just go straight from your fly line, maybe a 10-foot piece of 60 or 50,
mm-hmm.
you know. Cause
what would be the purpose of that?
Well, like I said, the tarpons are, especially along the island here, you see how clear the water is, you know, they're very, very leader shy. And if there's a knot in there going from, you know, from your butt section to your tippet, a lot of times these fish will see that and they will just turn away from your fly.
Yeah. If you were going to do like a taper leader, you just want to make sure you have a bite as well. Because I know with tarpon, you have to have a shock bite.
Yeah. You want something that can absorb some abrasion, you know. The leaders, the taper leaders that have joints in them, you know, those work fine for more in the murky water. Like if you go into the river or along the mainland where the water is a little murkier, you know, and you find tarpons there, those leaders are fine. You have no problem with that. But out on the flats, around the islands where the water is clearer, it's best to use just a straight leader.
Now, we did skip fly line, so let's stay with the permit for a second. Is there anything particular about the fly line that's going to be specific to permit?
Not really. I mean, you know, a 9 weight or a 10 weight floating line, that's best.
So you're going to use floating line most of the time for permit fishing?
Yeah, floating line, because if you're on the flats, you know, whether you're in the boat poling around or you're wading the flats, and if you use an intermediate or a sinking line and you present that fly to the fish and you present it a little too early, that fly will, and that line will just sink to the bottom, and you'll strip on the bottom and you'll snag stuff all the time. So you want your fly to, your line to be on the surface, and that'll keep your fly above the bottom.
Rob, I think that to add something to that, I think that he was answering that in the way you asked the question. Is there anything specific to the permit? And as an expert permit guide, there is nothing that's relative to the permit for the fly line. That is an important question for the angler, whether it depends on their casting ability, the conditions, and the rod that they have in their hands. So if you have a heavy front-loaded fly line, whether it's a permit specific or flat specific, you do want to make sure it's a tropical line. No matter what you do, when you're coming to Belize, make sure you have a tropical fly line. Otherwise, it's going to become very sticky. It's going to limit your cast and match something that fits your rod. Because if you have a medium or slower action rod, which is perfectly fine, you may not want a line that is too heavy for it. Whereas if you have a very fast action rod, a heavier weighted line is going to help load it better. But also, you know, on the conditions
that heavier front taper is going to help present a bulky fly in the wind, but it may spook fish in a spooky conditions because it's going to fall out of the sky a little harder.
You know, that's a great point, Ben, because I actually went ahead and bought all new lines. For me, I had to fill in some of those gaps for tropical lines because I did have some cold water lines coming out of the Northeast for striper. And, you know, Cortland has an incredible line, the liquid crystals, and they have tropic-specific lines. And I'm sure Rio and all Cy Angler and all the different line companies have some type of tropical lines. But for me, I went ahead on the 8-weight. I bought the tropical bonefish. On the 9, I used a 9-weight liquid crystal Cortland line. And then on the 10, I had a tarpon, which was a front-loaded. It was a front-loaded line. It was Orvis-specific tarpon rod, which basically means that front-loaded, the belly of the line gets a little fatter at the end to load quickly for a quick pickup and a quick shoot to get onto a tarpon quickly. And they were all tropical lines, so that's great. Now, let's talk a bit about the rods. Is there anything specific about the lines and the rods as far as, do you want a fast action rod or do you want a medium fast, a medium? Like, do you see anything particular about the rods, Ernest?
Well, when it comes to the rods, I will say, you know, if you have a few rods or if you one of your friends have different setup of rods, you know, try them and see which one you like, you know, which one fits your way of casting. Because for me, as a guide, you know, the minute I pick up a rod, you know, I can tell how I need to cast that rod to make it load. So I would say, you know, try them out first and get a feel for them, and then you know which one you need, either a softer rod or a stiffer rod or fast action rod.
One of the things that we had been working on for me and my casting into these kind of delicate presentations here, you kind of have to be in a certain bucket at a certain distance in a certain amount of wind, right? Because in permit fishing, you're going to have wind.
You're going to have conditions.
You're going to have to drop it on a specific spot at a specific time,
yeah.
Which is, Max says, quickly.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, Melvin talked about buck fever here when you start seeing, you know, you can cast perfectly right here in the bay.
Yes.
But when that permit shows up on the fly, you know, you can get, oh, it's time to go. So you got to slow down your back cast.
Yeah. You get all hyped up and all, you know. I'll go in and, you know, you realize you're just overworking yourself. You got to slow down, let that line load in the back, and then present that fly.
I think buck fever
is like 99 degrees. Permit fever is like 104 degrees.
Right.
Like you're on the verge of going to the hospital.
Yeah. So what are some of those things that you saw even through my cast or that you can see would be maybe typical of people's cast when they're trying to hit that permit as far as their cast or their load?
Compensating for the wind is number one. And changing your cast from an avid trout angler to a saltwater, wide open, nothing blocking the wind caster. So switching to sidearm, keeping the fly away. If the wind is coming from really anywhere, if you keep the back cast lower and closer to the water, it's not up in the wind and blowing around. On the forward cast, if it's lower and to the side, it's not flying over the head of the fish and spooking it. Because any fish anywhere, anything that comes from above is a predator. That's why they spook when they see a shadow. That's why they spook when they see the rod tip or a splash. Because anything that comes from above is a predator to a fish. So since they've grown up, they're afraid of things from above.
Right.
The Fly Fishing Show Tour travels the country every winter. From January until March, the largest consumer fly fishing shows in the world will be in one of six locations. The regular stops are Marlborough, Mass., which covers the New England area, Edison, New Jersey, which is the New York, New Jersey, Mid-Atlantic States show, Atlanta, Georgia, Denver, Colorado, Pleasanton, California, the Bay Area show, and finally back to where it all started in Pennsylvania at the Lancaster show. These shows are super fun events that are packed with teaching, presentations, and everything you could ever want to know or see in fly fishing. Find all the details at flyfishingshow.com.
What did you see, Max? You fish with me all week. What are some of those tips that you continue to remind me to do when I saw the buck come? Saw the permit come up on the flats?
Well, one of the things that I always keep telling you is to slow down and relax. Just try and let the rod work. and not get your adrenaline pumping too much, and you know, try and present the fly properly, because if a fish don't see it, they won't eat it, you know. So you got to try and just slow down, let the line work. And
yeah, you did great. I mean, that's unbelievable, because every time you tell me to slow down, I make sure that I let that back cast go all the way back, let it load the rod on the back, because I have a tendency to be fine letting it load on the front, but sometimes when I let it go back, I don't let that fly and that line lay out so it doesn't load the rod on the back cast. So you did a great job of reminding me to let that fly line load in the back. The other great point that actually changed my entire week is when you told me to cast sidearm. Stop trying to do this overhand mayfly trout cast. Go to the side. And when I was going to the side, it would let my hand go way back, which was loading my rod in the back, and I would see a much better taper on the front, and the fly was going a lot farther.
And distance. Also, because you're casting a little bit overhead, and due to the wind that we've been facing all week, you know, the wind take control of your cast, you know, so you got to try and keep it a little bit lower, and then the wind won't take control of it. You know, it's going to lay out properly.
That sidearm cast was actually great. We saw that, I think it was the second day, we saw that it had to be about a 15-pound permit come up on the flat there. It was like in the waves on the left. You remember the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And you're like, it's my turn. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go. And it was my turn up in the front of the boat, because you rotated the front of the boat. And that big, huge permit came up. And it was, you could see it in the wave. So the wave would come through. And then once I saw the size of that tail, I mean, it had to be 15 inches or more long, just the tail from tip to tip. I said, this is a big fish. This is going to be about a 15-pound permit. And every time I'd cast, I was casting overhand, and the wind was taking it to the right, because the wind was blowing from left to right. And the hardest part was the fish was actually feeding from right to left, which was making it even more difficult. In that situation, I went overhand. I was right. And then that last cast, just before he left the flat, I put it on his tail. So what would advice would you give somebody, in addition to maybe casting sidearm there, Maxie, to have a better shot? You gave me three great shots at that 15-pound permit. What would be some things that I need to think about to make that cast better the first time rather than the third time?
Well, again, when it comes to permit fishing, your first cast is always your best cast. If you don't execute on your first cast, then the fish, you know, you'll be either going too left, too right, you know, and you got to try and make another cast, and by then sometimes the fish is going to be aware that something is wrong, you know, something he'd been hearing the fly or hearing the fly line hitting the water. So it's always to execute on your first cast. That's always the best cast when it comes to permit fishing. Speed and accuracy, that's the key to permit fishing.
I love it.
Max, while we got you here talking about great casts, when Rob got in the zone, we had an opportunity while we were fishing here where you spotted a school of fish. I made a cast. I was able to hook up with a permit. The permit stuck around, and you said to Rob, do you want to get a double header? You knew that he was already in the zone, and we were fishing well together. So it's an opportunity that doesn't present itself too often. And we were talking about grand slams. So I'm wondering, how many grand slams do you catch a year? Or your clients catch, or your boat catches?
Honestly, last fishing season, you say, was honestly my best fishing season. I think I got about 7 or 8 grand slams
last year.
That included one super slam.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you know what happened? Why don't you tell us? Like, I hooked a permit, and you said, "Do you want to
get the double?"
I mean, because the school was still it was following my permit.
Yeah.
And so I reacted to that because I've been in that situation with different fish, and I knew they were following it. So I, instead of fighting too hard on the fish, I just kind of tried to steer them around and keep the school following them. Rob grabbed his rod, and tell us what happened.
Well, it bring me back a couple of days before I caught the double. We were actually talking about it, like, you know,
yeah.
Have you ever caught a double there? The opportunity ever comes up, and it's not often that an opportunity comes up to get a double permit. It's very, very rare.
So to come to my question about you had 7 or 8, you said 7 or 8 grand slams last year.
Yeah.
How many double header permits have you caught?
Last year, none.
Total. How about in your life?
None. I remember I told her maybe I got one, but now thinking about it, I'm digging back deep in the back of my head. I think it was a permit and a bonefish we hooked onto. Cool. Not two permit.
So never two?
Actually, it was my first double on permit. The boat.
That's amazing.
And how long double. Have you been guiding?
I've been guiding for about 14 years now, sorry. But at Tarpon Key, about 7, going on 8 years, somewhere around there.
Wow, so that's a pretty rare opportunity. So then what happened? Like, tell us from what you were watching from the back of the boat. I had the fish on, saw the school.
Yeah, when you get hooked on, I saw the school came up along with the fish that you're hooked onto, and I immediately it programmed in my head that this is an opportunity to get a double. You know,
from because, talking about it.
Yeah, from talking about it, and when you're hooked onto a fish, and if you don't see the school spook, it means that more than likely they're hanging around with the other fish, and another one will eat. You know, because they're not spooky. And I told him, "You want to try and get a double?" Hell yeah. Yeah, you pull out the rod. It's a good thing he moved on point. I mean, very quickly, because sometimes the opportunity don't stay around for very long, you know. Yeah. So he get the line loaded, put a cast, and you did a great job too, you know, try and steer that fish and move it around.
So it was his second cast that then we saw that
second
one
cast.
Peel off.
Second cast, yes. And then
so I want to talk about the hookup, because we hooked up and then he starts taking off and we quickly realize that there's a knot in the fly line somewhere.
Fly line.
So Max is trying to work the knot. Eventually he bit fly line, got the knot out because it was so tight. And yeah. So he got the knot out and we started to run. And as soon as we started to run, because we had the knot, what happened then?
It went in the coral.
Right in the coral.
Right in the coral.
After. So what does Maxie do? He jumps in the water.
Again.
Like the second time he jumped in this week.
Over again this trip, yeah.
Jumped in the water, released it from the forest coral. It was in another coral. We released it from that coral. It was in the third coral, and he's using the pole
to get it loose.
Yeah, we got that second fish out of three corals.
Yeah. I think it was the third one that he had to jump in for.
Yeah.
But that one was in there.
And the best part, obviously, was you were right next to a flat, getting him up on the flat and taking a couple quick pictures and releasing a double. And Maxie, who's... fish was a bit bigger, just for the record.
It was yours.
He's like, yeah. But mine was first, though. He's like, I got mine first.
Yeah.
Mine was a lot smarter.
Well, I said, well, that's fine. I'm looking for big, dumb permit. You can go for the small, smart ones.
Okay. So that was just, you know, I thought that was such a cool story, and it was a really fun experience to share with a fellow angler. And, you know, my point on that is just to kind of try going for that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, let's kind of talk about flies, because I know we've been through the rods, we've been through the lines, we've been through the leaders. The next part in this equation, Ernest, is flies.
Flies.
How would I be prepared for Belize for flies? What do I want to have in my trusty fly box?
Okay, definitely when it comes to the flies you want to bring, or, you know, we have flies here at the lodge for sale too. There's a lot of flies tied for this area, like these here, like the Flexos, the Bowers, Camos, Ragheads.
Yep.
Yeah, no, those are great flies, the Merkins. Yeah, this is a Flexo here, and like what Max was just pointing out to me, flies for Belize, and fishing on these flats, it's critical that you put weed guards on them.
Yeah, I noticed that. Much different than even up the road here in Mexico, where you're going to be on a lot more sand flats. Yeah. Some of these flats are going to have coral and turtle grass.
Yeah, and, you know, that helps you a lot, because if you make a shot to a fish that, you know, you present that fly either too far away, or if the fish is coming towards you and you drop it a little too short, then you could actually just leave it there and let the fish come into it instead of recasting, because you might lose ground and the fish come to you too fast. So the weed guard will help you into... present your fly. If it's not in the right spot, you can leave it there, or you won't get hung up on the bottom.
I fished a lot of places where they suggest having weed guards. And if your fly is tied properly and rides right, it doesn't matter that much, but you have to have them here. Some spots it doesn't matter, but then you go to the next spot and there's live coral. I mean, these corals are going, you know, up and down feet in the water column. It's not just stuff to snag on the bottom. You're talking about fan corals that they're swimming around, and your fly has to bounce over them.
Let's talk a bit about flies. You mentioned the Flexos. You get the Bowers.
Flexos, the Bowers,
Ragheads,
Merkins. You know, those are all good flies.
So let's talk a little bit about weight of fly here, too, because a lot of times we hear the word raghead or bower or flexo. What about weight and presentation? Like, sometimes you need the dumbbell eyes, sometimes you don't. Like, when do you want to factor in the weight of a fly?
Well, you want to factor in the weight of the fly depending on the conditions, because if it's windy, you know, you can use a little heavier of a fly so that the wind and the current don't take it off from away from the fish too fast. And also for deeper water, you know, if you're fishing deeper water, you can lengthen your lead a little bit, and with a heavier fly, you can get down to those fish. But, you know, in the calmer situations, you know, you want to use the lighter flies, you know, where you would use like the bead chain eyes on them. And like these flexos, they hit the water pretty soft because of the mesh body. So
talk a bit about the waves, the wind, the sound when it's wavy and windy, and when it's calmer, why I wouldn't want to use, say, dumbbell eyes.
So when it's really calm, you know, these fish they're very spooky. They're just aware of anything moving, any ripple in the water. So that's why you want to use a lighter fly, something that'll hit the water a lot softer versus a heavy fly when it's calm. When it's more choppy and you have all the wave actions on the flats, or, you know, wherever you're fishing and it's choppy, you know, the fish are more relaxed because they, you know, the surface is disturbed, so they're not spooked from anything coming above them, like birds or whatever it's going to pass above. So the fish are pretty calm on the bottom, and so that way you can actually drop your fly closer to a fish when you have a little bit of wind.
Ben actually gave me a fly that was a crab pattern, but it didn't have a lot of the extras. You know, what was that made out of? Why was it such a soft landing, lighter fly, Ben?
That was made out of EP fibers.
Okay, yeah.
And it had, I can't remember if that had small dumbbells or bead chain even on it.
Yeah, I think it was bead chain.
One or the other. And actually, talking about the setup and bonefish versus permit. I love permit, and I catch bonefish while I'm permit fishing usually. There may be a spot that you go specifically for bonefish, but what I like to do is I rig up a light permit rod and a heavier permit rod. And the light permit rod doubles as my bonefish rod, a smaller crab. Maybe it's a shrimp, but something that's my light, calmer conditions, more delicate casting that is also my bonefish rod. And then my heavier setup that is a faster sinking crab fly.
So we've got the raghead, we have the flexos, we have Merkins. The merkins. That's going to be a good in different weights. So what sizes?
Yeah, different weights
about?
And best size is size 4.
Size 4.
Size 4.
Okay. Yeah.
You can go a little smaller to a 6 as well. If you're on the flats and you're walking and you ever pick up like a piece of like the dead coral and stuff, you'll find little crabs in there, and they're pretty much just about the size of like that, right? Like see a thumbnail.
Flexo.
And that's just about the size of the crabs on the flat. So that's what they're feeding on.
So, Ernest, let me ask you this, because people say size of the hook pretty often, but especially in saltwater hooks, the style of the hook and the size can vary pretty greatly. Like, my favorite permit hook runs very, very small for the size. So I prefer when someone tells me the size of the crab, say, based off of coins. Like, do we want like dime, a nickel, or a quarter, or what size?
Yeah, kind of like my thumbnail.
So you say a dime to a nickel?
A little smaller than a quarter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A quarter is a little big.
So that's going to cover us for our hermit flies. Now, what about our tarpon flies? Let's talk about tarpon flies.
Yeah. So one thing before you move on. One thing we've noticed over the past few years is bulk buildup for the crabs, and it closes the throat of the hook. And
you need a good gap.
You want to make sure you have a good gap on your hook.
Okay.
To be able to hook these permit.
That's a good point.
We've been getting some flies that, you know, just because of the way they're tied, that the body of the crab is taking up a lot of the gap of the hook. So you want to make sure that most of that gap is exposed.
Again, why I mentioned the size of the fly, because people will say, oh, I want this size. And, I've seen people tie 6s and 8s and 12s, and the fly is all the same size itself.
Yeah.
So on the 6, it might be perfect, but by the time you get to the 12, it's overdressed.
Yeah.
And I see that in all flies for all fish. evaluating flies, you know, for what I do for work at times. And they may be very well tied, but are they meant to catch a fish? And
yeah.
If you overdress the fly and you can't hook them,
right.
It doesn't matter if every yeah. fish eats it.
Yeah.
What about tarpon flies, Ernest? What are we talking about for tarpon flies?
Tarpon flies. Yeah, definitely. I mean, some of the old classics like the cockroaches and the sievers, those are pretty good. Whether it's in the cockroaches, you know, you got the black and gray or the orange, black and purple. Toads are pretty good too. Chartreuse, black and purple, black death.
The black death, the red and black.
Yeah, those are really good colors. And size hook-wise, you know, you want a size 2-watt is good.
Okay. I jumped both my tarpon this week on the cockroach.
The cockroach, yeah.
Yeah, Max kept putting me on that cockroach. It was a good pattern.
Yeah, it's a good fly.
I got to tell you, it's a whole different game sticking a tarpon.
Yeah.
You know, setting that hook. They say don't trout set. Forget trout setting. Don't even strike set. You got to be pretty aggressive at least
gotta,
strike set.
You got to hit them hard.
Max told me to stop. First we were ripping their lips. He says, no, you can't rip the lips. Break their necks.
That's how you got to do it.
You got to break their
You got to hit them hard.
I would suggest to any angler going on a trip, whether it be a flats trip or anywhere where you've really got to set the hook, some jungle fish, anything like that, go outside one day, tie a 20-pound leader to the bumper of your truck, anywhere, something, tie it to it, and strip set and see how hard it is for you to break a 20-pound test. Most people would not believe how hard it is to break that pool. I mean, you probably cannot break it on a strip set because of the stretch of your line. You'd probably have to back up while pulling it to break that. And that's what you need to do on those fish.
Well, I've listened to some of Andy Mills' podcasts, and he's one of the most world-renowned tarpon fishermen in the world. And he actually has gear in his basement that can actually test him pulling on line to see how hard he's pulling. And he likes to pull about 8 pounds of pressure. He likes to put about 8 pounds of pressure. And he's talking more about when he's fighting the fish.
Fighting the fish, yeah.
But that's a great point, Ben, of trying to put a lot of pressure on a leader to just see what you can, because they have big jaws, those tarpon.
Yeah, very, very tough bone in the bottom jaw, and the top is more soft, but on the bottom it's very, very hard to get them hooked there unless you're right in the corner, and then up in the top or further back you can get them hooked, but right in that bottom jaw, that is like stone.
But
it's very hard.
That tarpon here and right in front of the lodge too. I mean, you go out, you're 2 seconds later, you're ready to anchor up and catch some tarpon, and they've been rolling a little bit and strip. You have to be ready. Even today when we went down to the jungle, we went down to Monkey River. We were fishing in the jungle with the howler monkeys. I kept saying, this is so serene. We have the birds, we have the howler monkeys, we've got beautiful scents and sounds. And it's such a serene environment. And you have to be ready at every single moment for this to be chaotic. Because if you just kind of get, you know, taken back by the breathtaking beauty, that tarpon is going to come bite your line and you're not going to be ready for it.
Yeah.
So you have to be ready to strip set.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like when you're fishing tarpon along the drop off here, I mean, you will see them rolling all over the place. And even if they roll right next to your boat and you cast out into that school of fish right there that's rolling and you start stripping, sometimes it's hard to see which one of those fish is going to hit your line if you see it at all. So you just got, with every strip, you got to be ready to hit them. You know, coming back to the flies, there's lots of different flies that work too. Like these clousers are a good fly. A lot of people like the gummy minnows.
How about bonefish flies, Ernest? What can we talk about as far as bonefish flies?
Yeah, bonefish, you know, lots of flies work, from Charlie's to the little squimps to Christmas Islands. There's a wide range of flies you can use for those.
Before we jump in, I want to let you know about the new travel section we have on the flyfishingjourneys.com website. Our goal and what we are passionate about is being on this fly fishing journey with you. That's why we go to the fly fishing shows and why we have started group travel with you. For the last 2 years, we have brought select friends and listeners to Iceland for curated hosted trips. We continue that with 2 weeks in Iceland this year, which are sold out, and 3 weeks in Iceland in 24, which are starting to fill up. These trips are pre-vetted for the best weeks on the best rivers. All the accommodations and details have been thought out and handled for our guests' convenience and enjoyment. This July, my good friend Tim Kamisa and I are headed to Alaska for some salmon fishing in the Bristol Bay area. I head back to Alaska in August to experience two additional lodges, new rivers, and different runs of salmon. July is more kings, chums, and sockeye, where August the target is silvers. Our goal here in Alaska is similar to Iceland, getting you the most hands-on current information. We don't have any Alaska trips to offer in 23, but stay tuned for more information for 24. Good. Anything particular to this area of Belize that is going to be better for bonefish flies? I know you guys have, Melvin, talk a little bit about the area that you can run down here not too far, the
Sapodillas.
Yeah, so the Sapodillas is about 30 miles south of us, and it is a bonefish haven. There are literally thousands of bonefish down there. So whenever we have calmer weather, the guides like to run down there and let people catch 30, 40, 50 bonefish. There are some permit around there, but it's mainly a bonefish heaven down in that area.
What type of flies would I want to use down in the Sapodillas, Ernest?
Some of the same squimps, the Charlies, the Christmas Island specials. You know, those are flies that work really well here.
So what sizes?
Six. You can use anything from a 4, 6, and 8.
Okay.
And with those, you know, you want some that's a little bit heavier than others as well. You know, you can use the bead chain eyes on some and have some that with dumbbell eyes.
Before we close, we have to talk about one little crazy experience, probably the most crazy experience I've ever had out in the water. I was missing some fish, catching some fish, you know. I was missing some permit, and I finally got myself dialed in. We actually caught that double.
Confidence skyrocketed.
I felt all the juju just go out of my fingers. And I just felt I was ready, that I was dialed in now. It was my turn up at the front of the boat. And we came around this backside of this flats, and it was just kind of like a big, giant pool, and there's some coral around. It's super clear. And over on the distance, I heard Ben say, oh, there's a couple permit coming. And then Max, he said, oh, look, there's two coming in your area. Get ready to go. And all of a sudden, I saw these two giant, they looked like submarines, coming in between two rock coral heads. And I confidently put that fly right out in that nice little spot. And I stripped and I stripped. And he started coming for it. He came straight for it like a torpedo. And you guys weren't saying anything, because I don't actually think that you guys knew that he ate that fly. But all of a sudden, I came a little bit tight. And I saw him kind of, he makes that little shudder, almost like a trout mating. And he made that little shake. And I slowly put a nice little pole, a nice little strip set on him. And I lifted the rod, and it was go time. And he took off, and he's making a coral run, and he's running, and all of a sudden, we got him to run over. Maxie, what happens? He ran over the ledge, right?
Yeah, we got him off the drop-off, and he's starting to head down deep.
And you said that was good news, right?
That was great news.
That's what we want.
Usually good. When mine went off, you said that, okay, good, we got him now.
Most of the time, when you get him in the blue water, you got him, the permits. But what happened is somehow there was a patch reef down deep about maybe 40 feet. And that permit went up against that patch reef, and it got stuck in the coral. The fly line got stuck in the coral.
But all I know is I'm talking to Ben, and we're chit-chatting away, and we're adjusting my drag, and we're so happy we've got him in the blue water. And I was thinking, this man is like a 15-pound permit.
And I heard this, no, from the back.
Yeah. He says no. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking to myself, Fly Fisherman Magazine. I'm like, I'm holding on to this massive permit. I'm already thinking social media. I can't wait to text my wife.
Yeah, and so somehow that permit got off, and what came up was a very strong Belizean strawberry grouper.
So what happened here is it gets caught in this coral, and as soon as he starts, like, the thing stops, and I'm like a little bit stuck. Fishing with Max all week, Melvin, I have to tell you, I know from the sounds of his voice, like from the different sounds that he makes, I know this is really good or this is really bad. He'll say, good cast, man. And I was like, oh, and it's like, nice one. Oh, or he'll swing the boat. As soon as I feel that pole, make a hard swing. I was like, oh, time to get to go time. He's moving the boat in direction. Or he'll say, ah! And I'm like, oh, shoot, this is bad. And so he said, ah!
That's true. He's like, no.
Yeah. And this coil got stuck. And as soon as it released, I'm like not feeling anything anymore. And I'm like, oh,
but
no.
You're stripping hard in case he was coming at you.
He's coming at me. I'm still keeping hope alive. And all of a sudden, I felt something. I'm like, no, guys, hang on. And I brought up and I lifted my line right at the boat. And it's about a 3-inch strawberry grouper on the end of my line. Melvin, how does a 15-pound permit turn into a 3-inch strawberry grouper?
You have worked a miracle that I've never seen before.
That was rarer than a doubleheader of permit.
Yeah. I don't think I'll see that again in another lifetime, a 15-pound permit.
So now that you have that talent, if you could turn that around,
yes. Yeah.
This is the then gift. You'll be a famous fisherman.
This is the gift we're working on. But I can tell you, Ben starts cracking up. Maxie starts cracking up. And all of a sudden, what am I going to do? I start cracking up too. I mean, what else can you do, right? That's permit vision.
You could have shed a tear or two.
I think he did.
When we weren't looking, he turned his head and shed a few tears.
I had to admit.
It was so funny. It was tears of laughter at that point.
I had to admit, I made an error. I started thinking about the photo before we actually landed the fish. So there's another best tips when you go permit fishing in Belize. Don't worry about the photo until actually you land the fish.
You get it in your hand. That's when you worry about the photo.
You can't worry about the photo until it's in the net. Yeah. Speaking of the nets, Max, since we got a doubleheader permit for you in that nice catch cam net with the beautiful tarpon scale, it is, if you didn't notice it, it has Tarpon K Lodge in the handle. We're going to leave that net for you for your boat, and that's your net to keep for double netting.
Only for a double permit, right?
Yeah.
only for a double permit.
I've also got a nice fly fishing show hat here to leave for you.
Thank you very much.
But you keep that net and keep catching permit in it.
Double permit.
Double permit. So
thank you.
He does guarantee, if you get to fish with Max, he's guaranteeing you a double header.
No guarantees.
I've been fishing for too long to guarantee fish, especially permit fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, the price just went up. Yeah.
Like the fly that I loaned Rob.
He keep using it and catching fish, so the price keep going up.
Yeah. I think it's a $200 fly now.
The price of the flies is always a lot more expensive on the boat, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, guys, thank you all. Ernest, Maxie, Ben, Melvin, thank you all for being on the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast. It's been a great week here in Belize. We've got some nice permit. We jumped a few tarpon. We caught some bonefish. We got some snook, and that's the other thing, too, is all our bycatch. I mean, we got a big Jack Craval today.
Strongest strawberry grouper
ever.
In the hood.
Dude, the strawberry grouper take you into your backing. What else did we catch, man? I mean, all kinds of snappers and jacks. And
Needle nose.
We caught a houndfish.
Yeah, there's some beautiful varieties of jacks here.
Yeah.
They're underrated, and just you should target those. Oh, we got some... Some they call Bonita here, but we would call them from the northeast, false albacore.
Did some snorkeling, snorkeled the reef.
Yeah, you guys did some amazing snorkeling and swam with some tarpon. So there's a lot to offer around here.
Don't pass up the snorkeling.
No,
it's
snorkeling
amazing.
It's awesome. Well, guys, thank you all for being on the Fly Fishing Journey podcast.
Yeah, we want to thank you guys for coming out and hope you've enjoyed your time here. And congratulations on your catches.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.